This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the Manitoba government has released an update on spring thaw conditions in the province. We'll hear from Infrastructure Minister Ron Schuler. Regina area farmer Todd Lewis has been re-elected president of AAPAS, that's the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan. We'll have a conversation with him. A total of 43 recommendations have been made to improve rural internet and cell phone service in Saskatchewan. We'll hear from Jeremy Welter, who is the chair of the APAS Rural Connectivity Task Force. And the retiring CEO of Pulse Canada believes the next watershed moment for agriculture is going to take place this fall. We'll hear from Gordon Bacon on that. So all of that and much, much more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, it's sunny and a little bit breezy here in the Parkland region today, but it looks like our temperatures will start to moderate.
Yeah, we're going to see positive numbers right in through the end of the week, through the weekend, and more often than not, you exclude today, those are going to be double-digit positive numbers. So some nice weather in store. Today, as you mentioned, a little breeze, and it's not a strong breeze. Basically, it's about a 20-kilometer-per-hour wind. That's right in that range where you notice it. Occasionally, you feel a bit of a chill from it, but it's not overly strong. However, hopefully it's an enjoyable wind, because it is really going to be what we're dealing with for many of the next couple of days. Things may die down a bit on Friday, but right back up for the weekend. Near 2 degrees this afternoon, the wind from the south to southwest. It will be easing up a bit into the evening hours and then picking back up toward morning into the 15 to even 30 range tomorrow. Mainly clear tonight, down to -2, and tomorrow up to 14. Nice recovery from today. Double-digit recovery from today. Partly cloudy sky tomorrow night, dropping off into lower single numbers, staying positive tomorrow night. The wind will ease up again, that nighttime breeze generally dropping off into the 10 to 20 range. And Friday, the lightest wind of the bunch, partly to mostly sunny with a high of 15. The weather pattern is pretty quiet. It's not that things aren't moving, it's just that they're not really impacting us with any significant weather. The temperatures will stay reasonably mild, well above normal, through the weekend, and will likely stay dry for the days. Saturday is dry, with a high of 11. Sunday is dry, with a high of 13. It's those in-between hours, Saturday night, and even the very early morning hours on Sunday, when there may be a couple of showers that come through. Temperature gets down to close to zero at night, which means just could just easily be flurries as sprinkles. But we'll get that out, and then it looks like we settle into what looks to be a fairly rut pattern into next week. There are two ways it can go, depending on the exact placement of weather systems. We could be just on the cool side of the block. In that case, we'll see mid-single numbers for much of the week, but dry weather. We could also be just on the warmer side of the block, which would mean about an 8-degree difference in the low teens, and stuck there through the week. So either way, it's going to be above freezing. Nighttime temperatures, not too bad either, but pretty quiet weather right through the first third of April.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw and Dauphin are at -5 degrees, Swan River -6, Brandon -4, Show Lake Russell and Roblin -7. Regina is at -1, Saskatoon +2, Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington -3, Broadview, Mooseman -4, Indian Head -2. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, a southwest wind at 15 kilometers an hour. 53% is the relative humidity. The temperature is -3 degrees With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 8 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 7 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 13 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is plus 5. The normal low is minus 7. The sun rose in Yorkton at 6:27 this morning, and it will set at 7:20 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hot spot was Great Falls at 0. The cold spot Thompson at minus 27. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek at plus 1 degree, the cold spot Key Lake at minus 28 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 90 seconds time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The Manitoba government has released an update on spring thaw conditions in the province. Infrastructure Minister Ron Schuler has the details.
Having seen normal to below normal precipitation in our Tarrer Basin since November 2020, the hydrological forecast this year will be on the border of a non-event. As we know, Manitoba is at the bottom of what used to be Lake Agassiz. We drain water in total or in part from Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, North Dakota, Minnesota, Montana, Ontario, and a very small piece of South Dakota. Or we drain the equivalent of draining Germany, Poland, France, and Hungary. Thus, we look at our entire basin when we make projections. For instance, southern Manitoba and southern Saskatchewan are down 20% of normal precipitation of the past 40 years. Some areas in southwestern Manitoba are at a record low precipitation level. Satellite images and model simulations show most of the snow in southern and central basins have already melted. Both Environment and Climate Change Canada and the National Weather Service of the United States now predict near normal precipitation for April, May, and June. Snowmelt spring off is now mostly complete in southern basins, including the Red River, Souris River, and the tributaries. Minor snowmelt runoff is expected for central Manitoba basins, including the Assiniboine River Basin. Spring melt and runoff is not expected to start in northern Manitoba basins until the second week of April. So the combination of a dry fall in 2020, normal to below precipitation this winter, snow melt complete for the southern watershed basins, snow melt runoff complete for most southern watershed basins in Manitoba. Thus, the risk of major spring flooding is low for this season in Manitoba. And the Red River already peaked at all locations in Manitoba. Thus, the Red River floodway will not be operated this spring. There will also be minimal operations of the portage diversion and will only be operated to reduce ice-related damages in the lower Assiniboine River. The Shellmouth Dam is running at minimal levels to keep the Shellmouth at an optimum level, enough to alleviate dry conditions and provide enough storage should we need spring flood protection. Lake Winnipeg, Lake Manitoba, and the White Shell Lakes are all within their operating ranges, however, at lower levels than last year. The Fairford Dam on the northern end of Lake Manitoba is operating at 50%. Dauphin Lake is also within its operating range, but slightly above last year's level. Inflow from spring runoff into most Manitoba lakes is expected to be below normal, and most Manitoba lakes are expected to be within their operating levels at the lower end, well within summer. While there are no current drought impacts, our government is closely monitoring conditions and increasing its drought readiness. Droughts are difficult to forecast, as a late snowstorm or spring rains may reduce the risk of drought impacts. The Manitoba Drought Assessment Committee of Government has already met. This committee consists of agriculture and resource development, conservation and climate, economic development and jobs, emergency measures, and the Hydrological Forecast Center.
That's Manitoba Infrastructure Minister Ron Schuller. We'll have more with Minister Schuller coming up a little later in the program. But first, it's time for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of McDougall Auctioneering.
Beef and Forage Report.
On today's Beef and Forage Report, we hear from Sarah Sommerfeld, the Agri-Environmental Specialist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture in Outlook. She talks about invasive weeds.
A weed can be any plant growing in the wrong place at the wrong time. A weed can also be described as any non-native plant that has been introduced outside of its natural habitat. In these situations, a weed is often referred to as an invasive plant or an invasive species. Invasive plants can thrive in introduced habitats. The new habitat is free of natural enemies that would normally keep in check the plant's growth. Invasive plants have characteristics that allow them to take advantage of growing conditions to outcompete native plants and agricultural crops. These characteristics allow the plants to adapt to one or several habitats very quickly. As an invasive plant infestation grows in size and severity, the negative impacts to production, profitability, and biodiversity increase. Implementing practices to help manage and control the spread of invasive plants is necessary to limit potential negative impacts. Actions to prevent the introduction of invasive plants is the best defense and the most effective management tool. If an infestation is limited to a small area, actions that work towards elimination of the plants can be taken. Early identification of an invasive plant improves the likelihood of eradication or complete removal. Early identification, along with timely control actions, can result in significant cost savings over the long term. If an infestation is established, actions to contain the infestation and to minimize the spread to non-affected areas are the best choice. Using an integrated management plan is recommended and requires using multiple methods of control. These control methods can be either biological, chemical, or physical, and in some situations, the use of grazing livestock to control invasive plants may be used. When considering a control method, be aware of the environment surrounding the infestation. Chemical application is often thought as the primary option for invasive plant control. However, consideration of location, accessibility, site, topography, weed infestation size, and proximity to water and soil texture are all valid reasons to use alternative methods of control. This has been Sarah Sommerfeld, Agri-Environmental Specialist with the Ministry of Agriculture Regional Office in Outlook.
It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program, and that's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
The United States Department of Agriculture has released its prospective plantings and March 1st grain stocks reports. The USDA expects farmers to plant 91.1 million acres of corn, below the low end of pre-report expectations, and 87.6 million acres of soybeans, also below the range of expectations. Wheat acres, on the other hand, are expected to increase 5% to 46.4 million acres, which is on the high end of analysts' estimates. According to DTN lead analyst Todd Hultman, today's planting intentions are bullish for corn and soybeans and neutral for wheat. Meanwhile, Hultman pegged the March 1st grain stocks as bullish for corn and neutral for soybeans and wheat. On top of disruptions to major supply chains and shipping routes already due to the COVID-19 pandemic, recent events are causing even more headaches for pulse exporters and growers. The six-day blockage of the Suez Canal by the grounded container ship Ever Given caused a major backup of container ships, tankers, and other shipping vessels that's expected to take days to sort out. With many Canadian pulse exports going to Asia and Africa, This type of disruption would cause a domino effect back home. Before the Suez Canal blockage, Canadian pulse exports were already facing difficulties due to Egypt's blind lack of willingness to carry agricultural goods during the pandemic. Difficulties elsewhere include delays, backlogs, cancelled vessels, and a lack of empty shipping containers. The burden of additional costs to ship cargoes such as pulses will then be placed on growers. To make matters worse, an ongoing labor dispute at the Port of Montreal is already impacting shipments. Longshore workers on March 22nd voted to reject their employer's offer but have not yet submitted a strike notice. That uncertainty has caused volume at the port to drop by nearly 2% since the start of 2021, and shipments are being diverted away from the port. Bulk grain vessels would continue to be loaded and served at Montreal in the event of a strike as per the Federal Labor Code, but movement of containerized ag products such as pulse crops would be affected. The 2021 navigation season is officially underway at the Port of Thunder Bay as the tugboat Sharon M1 and barge Huron Spirit arrived late Friday. The tug-barge combo discharged a calcium chloride brine solution used as a stabilizer and dust suppressant. The same combo also opened the season in 2020, 1 year ago to the day. Two bulker vessels arrived early Saturday morning for grain cargoes, and six more were anticipated over the weekend as grain loading operations in the port hit the ground running. Thunder Bay, on the northern shores of Lake Superior, had its busiest year in over two decades in 2020, with annual cargo volumes topping 10 million metric tons for the first time since 1997. Of the 10.2 million metric tons of total cargo shipped in 2020, grain accounted for 9.2 million metric tons, up from 7.9 million in 2019. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after these messages. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's sunny and minus 3 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. As you heard a little earlier, the Manitoba government has released an update on spring thaw conditions in the province. Infrastructure Minister Ron Schuler says it's a little dry going into spring, but he doesn't believe Manitoba is in a severe drought just yet.
Currently, we have no drought concerns. Again, as I said in my report, a good rainfall, maybe even a late snowstorm will mitigate a lot of that. Those would not impact what we're talking about today insofar as any kind of flooding. Those would just make sure that the fields are wet enough to get crops in. So far, things look okay. But again, the forecast going forward is that we're not looking at a lot of rain coming in the next few months. So we are getting prepared. The committee is meeting that should we need to come up with any other measures, whether we have to pump water into dugouts, that kind of stuff, we'll make sure that we are prepared for all of that. At this moment, we do not have a concern, but the forecasting is looking like we're going to have a fairly dry summer.
He adds there's still a chance that some early spring rain or snow could impact Manitoba.
Well, and we have had this before. I mean, 2018, we also didn't use the floodway. We are at the bottom of what used to be a lake. So it doesn't even matter what we get here as far as rain or snow. It really matters what we get within our basins. And keep in mind, we drain almost all the way from Calgary. So there could be a substantive rain event in and around Calgary, and we would feel the impacts of it here. So, we want to be very careful. It's one of the reasons why our government has come out with a very strong environmental plan. We want to make sure that we are good stewards of the environment, that we're protecting the environment. Even at Manitoba Infrastructure, our projects now are, we put we look at it insofar as what impact that has on the environment. That's very important. Farmers are conservationists by nature. They want to make sure that they can keep growing their crops in a sustainable way. So we are monitoring it. We're going to be very careful in the way that we manage our water resources. That's why, a lot of our dams, we scale them back to make sure we don't drain too much water away. But we want to be mindful that there are some pretty wild swings in the environment, and we want to make sure that we take care of all Manitobans, including agriculture.
But Schuler doesn't believe the recent dry spell can be fully attributed to climate change.
Well, we know that there's been a lot of change because of climate change, and we're watching for trends. This has been an up and down. We know that a lot of things are changing. The swings seem to be wilder than they have been before, and we are very careful in the way that we're managing our water resources, because they're very important to Manitobans. We want to make sure that we don't just drain all the water away and then have no water left over for agriculture or for our towns and our cities. And absolutely, it all goes through a climate change filter. We're cognizant of it. We've got a minister who is on top of her file, and we're setting targets we think that should be maintained. And Manitoba is probably one of the most green jurisdictions in North America, and we want to continue to be that. Because one of the things we want to be really careful about is we don't end up handing to the next generation an environment and a climate that is going to be harmful.
That's Manitoba Infrastructure Minister Ron Schuler. It's now 12:43 in Saskatchewan, 1:43 in Manitoba.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April closed at 120.97 today. That's unchanged. June live cattle closed at 122.90, up 67. April feeder cattle closed at 143.87, down 2.95. May feeder cattle closed at 149.40, down 2.80. April lean hogs closed at 101.05, up 12. May lean hogs closed at 101.50, down 12. And that's the livestock market conditions. Regina area farmer Todd Lewis has been re-elected president of APAS, the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan. Lewis was re-elected following the APAS annual meeting yesterday. He moves into his fifth year as president of Saskatchewan's General Farm Group.
Well, it's always an honor, I guess, to be president of an organization like APAS, and it's been a number of years now that I've been in the position, and the workload doesn't seem to get any less. There's always seems to be lots of farm policy to talk about, we've got a busy winter this past winter, and I think for the rest of the year with things like the carbon tax, rural connectivity, all the Canadian Grain Act review, APAS has a lot of work in front of us over the next number of months, and look forward to getting at her and trying to influence some policy.
Can you outline some of the key resolutions at your AGM yesterday?
You know, we had code of conduct, as far as the what's been released for grain growers over this past winter. Really, we had a resolution that rejected that proposal outright. Not saying that they shouldn't go back, they shouldn't try and create a code of conduct, but I think we want to go back to the drawing board and look forward to being involved in that process. And growers were just generally not happy with what was rolled out late last fall, and through the winter months here, we've heard lots of pushback on some of the proposals in that code. So I think we need to go back to the drawing board. Producers are more than willing to put their money where their mouth is as far as how they grow their grain providing a safe product for consumers, but they weren't very happy with some of the, especially the land use portions of the current code as it sits.
What are some of the key concerns then?
I just think some of the pieces around land management, we heard lots of that. I think water management as well. I think those are just some examples where farmers thought some of those were pretty impractical, and they want to have good conduct is good for our industry, but at the same time, when it gets into land management and so on, there was lots of pushback on that.
How was your discussion on improving rural internet and cell phone service?
Well, we're releasing today, our rural connectivity report. We had a task force of, I believe it was 6 producers across the province that spoke to stakeholders, all the way from large providers, service providers like TELUS and, other companies to their size, Fast Tele, of course, it's so important in the province. And also a number of smaller internet providers, as well as bureaucrats, regulatory people that they make the rules for the telecommunications industry in this country. And so we had a good broad-ranging conversation with these people and, as I say, numerous folks, and we came up with some recommendations and hopefully we'll see some of these implemented and see an improvement for services in rural Saskatchewan.
On another topic, when do you hope to start spring seeding?
Well, on this farm, on our farm just south of Regina here, we're usually that last week of April is plenty early. The first of May is always the target. And sounding by the forecast, over the weekend here and so on, guys will really be thinking of hooking up their drills and getting them pointed towards the field here over the next week or 10 days. So I think we're going to have an early seeding if it stays like this, but we'll be very happy if we get delayed and have a few rain events between now and the first of May. If we can't start because it's too wet, it's exceedingly dry along a lot of the southern Saskatchewan. The snow was welcome, but it ended up in places that didn't need it as badly as the southern half of the grain belt does. So we're still looking for that rain event and hoping we see some of that.
That's newly re-elected president of APAS, Todd Lewis. Meanwhile, Ian Boxall of Tisdale and Bill Probelsky of Willowbrook were re-elected as vice presidents of APAS yesterday. It's now 12:48 in Saskatchewan, 1:48 in Manitoba. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. As you heard, a total of 43 recommendations have been made to improve rural internet and cell phone service in Saskatchewan. For the past 6 months, the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan has been talking to experts about an issue impacting everyone in rural areas. Jeremy Welter from Corrobert is the chair of the APAS Rural Connectivity Task Force.
It really doesn't matter what aspect of an average person's day-to-day life you look at. It's estimated that completely connecting rural Saskatchewan could add another $1.2 billion to the province's GDP. We're talking from a health aspect, the ability to access telehealth services is incredibly important. The ability to do your banking in a COVID world, just the ability to learn and continue to work online, it's incredibly important. It's in this day and age, the ability to connect to the internet is no less important than having power or running water in your house.
How does SaskTel figure into all of this?
It's really interesting that, that we live in Saskatchewan. We have a huge advantage with SaskTel. And of course, as I'm sure most people in the province probably remember, while SaskTel was part of the equation to get everyone connected, say, for example, with telephones, SaskTel worked with a number of smaller local telephone companies. And, so looking forward to improving rural connectivity, I think a lot of people are starting to recognize, SaskTel hopefully included, they're starting to recognize that SaskTel can't and shouldn't be the only answer to the question of how do we make sure rural Saskatchewan gets proper, up-to-date, accessible internet access. SaskTel needs to work with some of the local, smaller providers that are currently offering solutions to, areas where there might only be 10 or 15 customers, and maybe SaskTel can't come up with an economic argument to create access for those people, but smaller companies have different economics and different business metrics, so they have the ability to provide service where SaskTel doesn't. I think ultimately it's going to be much more of a partnership than a one-stop shop with SaskTel.
Are there many smaller companies that can provide affordable internet for rural Saskatchewan?
I would say yes, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm living in an area where we have a smaller local provider. In our area, we've got a company by the name of Gopher Bites out of Macklin. You know, they provided service where no one else could, and it's not just the fact that they provide service. They provide up-to-date service, accurate, cost-effective service at reasonable speeds. So I would say yes, and having said that, my area is not the only one that has that option. There's a number of smaller companies across the province that are doing it. They're living proof of the fact that there is a viable economic business for smaller companies to provide service to areas where, you know, bigger companies simply can't make the same business argument.
Jeremy Welter from Corrobert is the chair of the APAS Rural Connectivity Task Force. I'll have more with Jeremy coming up right after this.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trading up right across the board this afternoon. They haven't closed yet. May canola trading at $757.10. That's up $30 per metric ton. July canola trading at $717.70. Also up $30 per metric ton. May Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.10¾. That's up 9 cents. May Kansas City wheat trading at $5.75¾, up 17¼ cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $6.18 per bushel, up 16¼ cents. May corn closed at $5.64¼, up 25 cents. May soybeans closed at $14.36¾. That's up 70 cents. And May oats closed at $3.78¾, up 10¼ cents. And that's the commodities update. We're back with Jeremy Welter from Corrobert, chair of the APAS Rural Connectivity Task Force. It has come up with 43 recommendations to improve rural internet and cell phone service. One of the major categories is the importance of smaller internet service providers. One recommendation deals with spectrum management.
Spectrum is the bandwidth that the data is transmitted on. In a very lay explanation, you know, it's really no different than radio waves. So we've got AM and FM radio. FM is obviously higher bandwidth, so you're going to get a clearer signal. It's just not going to travel as far. Cell phone signals are the same way, and every one of the cell carriers across the country purchases bandwidth from the CRTC at an auction. The federal agency, the CRTC, and the federal government really has treated bandwidth as a cash cow for the last number of years. And one of our recommendations is, aside from creating more of a set-aside, so more of a reserve of some of that bandwidth for smaller players to have access so that they can, you know, maintain and grow their market share in competition with the big three. The other part of the argument and the recommendation is that the federal government take into account not just whose pockets are the deepest, but how that bandwidth is going to benefit all Canadian citizens and all rural residents, because ultimately that bandwidth is a public resource. It's owned by the people of Canada.
So when it comes to administering bandwidth, is there room for improvement?
So I think there's definitely room for improvement. The biggest issue is right now, different aspects of connectivity are managed by different federal agencies. There's the CRTC that manages some of it. Industry Canada manages some of the licensing and the fees around it. There's a definite need to have some of it streamlined. We're one of, if not one of the only companies in the world that has such a seemingly disorganized group of federal bodies regulating something that really should be much more streamlined.
Are there any more recommendations you would like to highlight?
I think another big one that really is not focused on either federal or provincial, it's just kind of a common sense one, is a recommendation for a dig once policy. Where if, you know, when new neighborhoods are being built or when there are upgrades being done in existing areas, if for any reason there does have to be some digging done, say, for example, to replace water lines or sewer lines, you know, while they're there, lay down the fiber. The significant portion of the cost of fiber is the actual labor involved of doing the digging. The actual cost of the fiber is very negligible. So, you know, a very reasonable and simple one to come across on is a dig once policy. If you're doing any dirt work for trenching, put the fiber down while you're there, and then it's there for the future.
And will you be using this report as a blueprint for discussions in the future?
Definitely. The report is now public. It's going to become a kind of a living document, I suppose. And it's what we're going to use when we meet with provincial and federal agencies to discuss our policy recommendations. You know, hopefully in the next short while, we'll be able to put a bunch of green check marks beside a bunch of them and you know, start ticking things off as a call.
Jeremy Welter from Corrobert is the chair of the APAS Rural Connectivity Task Force. Its final report contains 43 recommendations to improve rural internet and cell phone service in Saskatchewan. Please stay tuned. Your agriculture weather is coming up next. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner, and it's almost 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. That means it's time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Sunny, winds south-southwest at 15 to 25, and a high of plus 2 degrees. For tonight, a few clouds, winds south-southwest at 10 to 20, a low of minus 2. For tomorrow, partly sunny, winds south-southeast at 15 to 30, and a high of 14. For Good Friday, partly to mainly sunny, winds northwest at 10 to 20, a high of 15. Saturday, partly sunny, a high of 11, and for Easter Sunday, mainly sunny, and a high of 13. In the Paw and Dauphin, it's minus 5 degrees, Swan River minus 6, Brandon minus 4, Show Lake Russell and Roblin minus 7. Regina is at minus 1, Saskatoon plus 2, Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington minus 3, Broadview, Mooseman minus 4, Indian Head minus 2. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, a southwest wind at 15 kilometers an hour. 53% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 3 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 8 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.